I'm David Schreiner Khan, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Michael Schein. Michael is the CEO of Microfame Media, a content marketing and strategy agency that implements systems and processes for turning organizations into recognized authorities in their fields for the purpose of generating new business. Michael created or facilitated the production of content for companies such as eBay, LinkedIn, Tesla, Inc., Sear Interactive, Interiors by Stephen G. and Citrix, to name a few. Michael also writes a weekly column for Inc. magazine and is a contributor to Fortune and Huffington Post. Michael, it's so great to have you on today. Welcome to the show.
It's wonderful to be here, David.
So let's start off by talking about content marketing.
Okay.
All right. Why did you end up in the content marketing business?
You know, it's been a long, strange trip, considering that a decade ago, this was a business that more or less didn't exist. I mean, people have been doing what's now called content marketing forever, for a really long time, but there was no industry called content marketing. And so when it depends how far back we want to go, but you know, when I was a kid, all the way up through high school, college, and the like, I had absolutely no desire to be a business person. I mean, that was the farthest thing from my mind. What I thought of as business was boring, in the way that I conceived of it. I wanted to be something in the arts. I wanted to be, you know, a novelist or a rock musician or something along those lines. And quite frankly, that's where I've gotten the most positive feedback. I was involved in writing fiction and things like that pretty early, and you know, won some awards and different things along that line. So as I got older, and you know, I played in a band for a while, and we had a little following, and this, that, and the other thing, I was an intern, and you know, my first low-level professional experience was at a company called Spin the Bottle Productions. They made the show Pop Up Video, which was a big hit on VH1 at the time. And one thing led to another, and you know, I got a job, and I worked at a company that the parent company ran call centers and customer service centers. So they picked up the phone, answered the phone for large corporations. And they always had a side division that was doing, you know, startup kind of things. And that was the division that I worked in. But while I was there, the call center part of the business blew up, became very, very, very successful. And the other part was just kind of limping along. So they shifted us all into the call center business. And before I knew it, I was doing that. And because I had some writing skill, I eventually ended up in marketing and in script development, which were related in that field. And eventually, I worked hard there. I was a vice president of marketing there, fast forwarding many years. And I created, or at least came up with, the program that would eventually be known as content marketing. I saw that a lot of people were generating white papers in the industry and using them to generate leads, and I implemented that at the company. But while I learned a whole lot there, and it was a fantastic experience in a lot of ways, I looked around and realized that at one point that I had gone pretty off course from anything that I had ever conceived of doing in my professional life. And not just being an artist, just having some agency and taking some real control of what I was going to build in the world. And you know, that wasn't happening. I was working hard, but I was just sort of falling into whatever was in front of me. So eventually I did leave. And my idea was, well, I can write. I know how to do these white papers. And I know a little bit about telecom, or quite a bit about telecom, because I was in the call center industry. I'll become a copywriter and write marketing copy and write white papers. And if I can do one a week, I'll make exactly what I was making at my job. naturally, that didn't work out that way. But I did become a copywriter, and I was working very hard, and I had some great clients. But what I noticed was that a lot of my clients would, you know, they would hire a copywriter like me, they would hire a branding agency, they would hire a web development company, and they would invest all this money, and then it was kind of like, what next? What do we do now? Because really, they didn't necessarily want a better website. They wanted to not fall behind in this brave new world that we were in. And to make it, to successfully drive business online, which is the way that most people do their product research now, you need to create this stream of entertaining and informational content on a very regular basis. And the clients that didn't really know how to do that, they didn't have the time, they didn't have the know-how. So I started providing a service where I would actually create the frameworks for them to be able to create ongoing content that drove their business goals. And it started working, and I was doing it on a consulting basis. And eventually I realized that I had built an entire comprehensive service. So I shifted from doing all the content, I shifted from doing all the copywriting myself to essentially providing a systematic marketing service that used online content to drive business for my clients. And eventually it turned into an agency. I don't know that it was like I have plan A, B, and C on a sheet of paper. It was more like a lot of anxiety because I wasn't achieving the vision that I had set out to achieve. So I used that obstacle after a lot of hand-wringing to come up with an even better idea. It's funny, I read this article by Malcolm Gladwell once, which basically said that all creativity comes from people underestimating how hard and how long something would take. So I think that's kind of what happened with me.
Was there a particular trigger that caused you to shift your thinking?
Yeah, that's a good question. There were two. One, and they happened right around the same time. So I had this one client who, you know, the majority of my clients when I was a copywriter, not particularly by design, but just because this is the way the world is going, the majority of my clients were digital. I mean, they had me writing website copy, they had me writing ebooks, white papers, that sort of thing. But I had this one client who I did offline material for. They had a product that was in the a very niche product in the energy industry, a very complicated piece of software with a consulting component, but it's an old school kind of industry. And they essentially were doing most of their marketing through trade shows. So I did that kind of work for them. But they saw that the world was changing and their trade show efforts weren't working as well anymore, but they had no idea how to get in on the online marketing thing, right? So they hired a head of business development. He brought in a branding firm. And I suppose the company or the people who owned the company trusted me and liked my insight because they flew me to London where they had a branch to consult. And I had never really consulted, and I was pretty upfront about that. And they said, well, you know, we get it, but we know you know this world, and we want to make sure that the England branch is in line with the American version. But more importantly, we just want to make sure that we know nothing about this online branding company, so we want to figure out what it's all about and make sure they're on the up and up. So I went there, and the branding company came in, and the first thing I realized was that they were really just a web design company. So not that they were being deceitful, but that's what they were. So they did their spiel, they did their thing, and when they left, the head of business development said, "What do you think?" And I said, well, I think you're going to have a really beautiful website. And I did. I mean, I thought their work was fantastic. But I said, you know, you flew me out here because you want to drive new business on a regular basis. And what are they going to do in order to make that happen? And they said, well, what kind of stuff do you have to do to get visibility online and to get potential clients to see you? And I said, well, you know, you have to create blog posts. They have to be the right kind of blog posts. Articles, you know, this was before podcasts were a big thing, but, you know, I started talking about all this. And they said, well, we don't have time for that. You know, we could probably do one a month. And instead of complaining about the client, which is what maybe I would have done in the past or what most people would have done, I had a bit of a revelation. And I said, well, listen, you know, people tend to respond to the same structures time and time again. I mean, the same storytelling structures, the same headline structures. I said, why don't you let me talk to everyone on your staff? And because as a copywriter, I always use the same templates time and time again. And I said, why don't you let me create customized templates, and then we'll roll them out, and we'll customize these templates that always get a good reaction time and time again. You know, that the people at your company, they'll each contribute one blog post a month. They'll know exactly what to write. And we'll see which ones are performing, which ones aren't. We'll do the back end editing, and then we'll keep changing it until it works. So we did that, and we ended up creating this very, very efficient process for creating the kind of content that you need to succeed online. And it was a big success, and they started driving business. And I said, wow, there might be a business in this.
Once you created this agency concept and you were working on a template-driven framework, how did this connect to the passions that you described earlier, like performing music and writing fiction?
Well, I'm going to answer that in two ways, because this is a topic that a lot of people talk about. And I certainly don't think that you can be very successful at something that you really don't see a purpose in, or that you really didn't choose for yourself. I don't know that I ever thought, hey, I'm going to run a marketing agency, but I've always liked writing. I've always liked coming up with creative ideas. I've always liked, you know, bringing attention to things. I mean, in my high school, I created this alternative magazine called The Foot, and we convinced all the kids, you know, who hung out under the bleachers to contribute to it, and then we convinced the principal to let us wear our t-shirts instead of our uniform shirts, you know. So I always had little schemes like that up my sleeve, and we got a yearbook picture out of it, you know, and this is Xerox magazine. So all of that stuff intersected very well with the market, because there's a real market demand for that right now. There is a caveat to that, though, that I have a longer term plan. So, for example, we've been growing now. It's, you know, when it started, like all businesses, it was just me. And now we have a team, and we have something in the company called the Creative Lab. So everybody in that Microfame Media gets to work on a project of their own design. And it can be anything. It can be a business. It can be an abstract art piece. It can be whatever. And we bring it to a workshop, a lab, and we have a process for making things better and that sort of thing. And if we like one of the ideas and we decide and assess that we like one of the ideas, we might double down on it and then triple down on it. And ultimately, the idea is that the creator of the project has a very large ownership stake in it. They're a partner in it, and we benefit as well. So one reason, I think, is that that's good business. You don't know, I don't even know content marketing will be around in 15 years in its present form. There'll certainly be some form of it. You know, Nintendo started as a playing card company. So there's some, you know, raw, naked self-interest in having this steady supply of products. But beyond that, my ultimate goal is to be a vehicle for creativity. I whether it's creative marketing ideas or some kind of creative product, or you know, maybe someone will write the great American novel. I have my own creative project in the Creative Lab, which is a very strange thing. It's a transmedia musical. So, you know, I think my passion and my interests and my talents intersect to deliver our core product, but it's also a vehicle for, you know, achieving some of the other things in my life that I've always wanted to achieve.
Fascinating. So, Michael, I suspect that Creative Lab is something that differentiates your company from others. I'm wondering what advice you can offer about, in general, standing out in today's business world.
Yeah, I mean, to put a caveat on that, I mean, I think the Creative Lab differentiates us internally. I mean, I think it's a good innovation process, but I don't really think that's what differentiates us to clients. I mean, I think what differentiates us to clients is that we're solving a very specific problem based on an obstacle that you know, no one knew how to solve. So I don't know if this is general advice, because there are a lot of ways to skin a cat. That's one thing I've realized, is that people achieve success in a whole lot of different ways. I would say for our core offering, you know, we entered the content marketing space very late. I mean, there were a lot of other companies doing that, a lot of companies that had really staked their claim, a lot of agencies, a lot of individuals. So if I had just set up shop and said, you know, I'm going to do another content marketing thing, I would have been an also-ran. I mean, I think it would have been really hard. I think what happened was that I saw an obstacle, and instead of using that as instead of seeing the obstacle and seeing a wall in front of me, a roadblock, so to speak, I used that as fuel for the next idea. So, in other words, and believe me, I've been guilty to this, you know, so many times, where I got so discouraged by something that the obstacle just kind of paralyzed me. And in this case, maybe it's because I had really staked a lot on making this successful. I used the obstacle as a stone to creating a whole service, a whole product. So that was my success here. But I think in other cases, success comes from creating something that you wanted in your own life, and other people like it too. I think it kind of depends. I mean, I know we're looking for a universal rule, but I think there really are kind of a lot of ways to skin a cat when it comes to success.
How important do you think establishing authority is in creating success?
What do you mean exactly?
Well, in your business, part of what you're doing is helping people demonstrate authority, right? Isn't that part of what the content creation is all about?
Yeah, demonstrate. So, you know, I think there's a couple ways to look at that question. I think even from an internal leadership perspective, knowing your field inside and out, and also knowing information from outside of your field, is a really good way to establish, you know, your bona fides as a leader. I mean, in my more immature days, I used to think that bosses and leaders really established their cred by screaming at a lot of people. And I realized that that can be very, very ineffective, especially now. So I think that the best leaders I've seen, the people that get people to buy into their vision, do so by being an authority in their space. I also think that being an authority writ large is very important. You know, in the past, the way that you found out about a product or a service was that a salesperson or an ad or something that interrupted you got in front of your face, right? So, I mean, I'm you know, I'm almost 38 years old, and we bought our encyclopedias from a door-to-door salesman. I mean, A, there are no encyclopedias anymore, but even if there were, that would never happen today. The first thing you would do is go online and search for the topic that you wanted to learn about or a solution to your problem. So as a result, people really resent getting hit over the head and hard pitched. So what I've seen is that the companies today that are doing the best, if they sell a product that's or a service that's complicated or expensive, they are publishing a lot, writing a lot, establishing a very unique point of view. And not hard selling people, but educating people and entertaining people. So in that case, you become an authority. You become a guru of sorts. But you know, you want to be the one who shows up with the best answers when people are looking for answers. And that's done very proactively now.
That's great. So Michael, shifting just a little bit to your own experience running your business and also what you've seen in your work with your clients, what have you observed in terms of the critical shift points businesses need to deal with as they're growing, when they've been successful and then they kind of get to a point where there might still be a market for what it is they offer, but they have plateaued and they can't seem to create a greater rate of success? What two questions. One is, what symptoms have you seen that exemplify those kinds of shift points? And second is, what have you seen that helps companies break through, particularly for their leaders to be able to break through and create greater success and get their company to the next level? Again, assuming that there's a market for what it is they offer.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know if what I'm going to say here is anything new, and it's been said in a million different ways, a million different times, but it's so critical, and maybe I can provide a little insight, even though I struggle with this every day. So, I mean, when you first start running a business or being a sole practitioner or a freelancer, you by nature have to do everything. I mean, you outsource a few things, but for example, sales. Even if sales isn't your favorite thing to do, and even if someone else were better at it than you, and when I say sales, you're always selling, but I mean the conversion process, the closing, as they used to call it, right? You have to do that when you start, unless you have a partner who's doing it, because salespeople cost money that, you know, it's just difficult to do when you're starting out. And that's true for any task that's not your core capability, the thing you do best, the right? So I think that when you reach a certain point where you're self-sustaining and where you have enough revenue and profit to personally live off your business, but also, you know, sustain investment into your business, you have to figure out ways to both systematize the things that you're good at so you can develop new things as an entrepreneur, and also bring in external resources to systematically do the things that you're just okay at, and absolutely get rid of things and have other people do the things that you're not good at. And I think that has to be reassessed at every certain point. I mean, you have to do that when you first become self-sustaining. You have to do that when you're headed toward becoming a million-dollar company. You have to do that when you're ready to sell. You have to do that when you're ready to IPO. I mean, at every phase, the skill set, the things you're doing with your time have to be radically reassessed and rejiggered.
And there are always new things to learn. There may be cultural shifts that have to happen in the company.
Right.
And there are probably new resources that your company needs to get you to the next level.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So speaking of resources, I know that this is a question that we ask all our guests. And you mentioned one thing about the about storytelling. Could you talk a little bit about what some of the major influencers have been in your career that have helped you to move forward, to propel and create greater success for yourself?
Sure. Well, it's funny. And I would say when I'm asked this question, I think when a lot of people are asked this question, they tend to think of influencers in your own field, maybe a business book they read, a mentor, you know, something like that. And all of that does apply. I would say that a big influence in everything I do is music. I mean, specifically punk rock, you know, and this, obviously you've picked up on this theme by now that I'm a big music fan, but you know, for those of you who aren't fans of the genre of punk rock, it was basically, you know, this bunch of misfits who, you know, started in the 70s and, you know, it went on to today, and they were very outside the mainstream, very outside the traditional structures of how the music business worked. And they said, listen, we're going to do things our own way, even if we have to create our own community. So they slept on each other's couches while they were touring. They went on college radio, they put up Xerox flyers, and they made it happen. And it basically influenced the world. I mean, some of the biggest bands today were influenced by punk rock and just that way of doing things. Also, they were always out to subvert and disrupt. I mean, there was the whole musical genre almost existed to get a rise out of people, to shake people out of their complacency. And I think everything that I don't know if I'm always successful, although I think I sometimes am, but I'm always trying to shake people out of their complacency in everything I do. I mean, if it's a client that, you know, needs attention drawn to their business or their product or their service, it's how do we use the resources at our disposal, not go out and spend $1 million, but use the resources at our disposal creatively to really make a splash and shake things up. And I think that's just been, that mindset has been really influential to everything that I've done. So that's one. There's a book called Wired for Story by Lisa Crone that was really influential to me. And after I read that book, it was funny. I first read an article in Wired that spoke to this topic, and that led me to this book. And since then, there's been a whole lot of other research on the topic I'm about to discuss. But this book was central to me. And what it basically states is that there's a big difference between great storytelling and great writing. And great storytelling is based on a certain structure. I mean, the idea is that we as human beings devour stories, and we're very responsive to stories. And there are a lot of theories to why that is. You know, some think it's rehearsal for bad things that can happen to us. Some think our ability to tell stories for that reason makes us the dominant species. But, you know, you'll notice every religious text is in the form of a story. It's really, really powerful stuff. And you can tell the same events in one way, and it won't be a story. It'll just be a bunch of events strung into a sequence. And you can structure them a different way, and it becomes a story. And not only was this influential to the creative writing that I still do, it was really influential on the structure of my business, because it showed me that if you can focus first on the structures of how people present their authority and their knowledge, you can really change people's perception and bring attention in a very big way. So, essentially, the idea that you don't have to be the world's greatest writer online is really powerful, because the internet is driven off of words, but you can never be boring. But the good news is you can engineer non-boredom. So that was a huge influence on both me as a person and my business.
And Lisa Cron is really an expert when it comes to this whole concept of story, and I'm really thrilled that she was a guest on episode 34 of Smashing the Plateau.
But she is a big influence. That book was great. You know, to stay on the book topic for a while, there are a couple other books. There's a book by a gentleman named Franz Johansson called The Click Moment. And he has a consulting company called the Medici Group. I've had the good fortune to meet him, since I've read his book. And he's a really great, really creative guy. But his most famous book is called The Medici Effect. But that's not my favorite of his books. It's another book called The Click Moment. And it's really shifted the paradigm of how I work and live my life. And it's funny, I'm a big reader. And even though I read a lot of business books, they're not my favorite books. I mean, if you ask me what my favorite books are, they're typically novels or history books or some things like that. But this is one of my favorite books in general, not just a business book. And basically, it talks about how even though we spend all this time trying to strategize in business and just in any creative venture, the world is essentially random. I mean, you know, the human mind tries to form patterns out of things, which is why story structures work so well. But the events that happen out in the world are quite random. And so what he argues is that you need to have a system where in a very controlled way, you're constantly making little bets, and that's a term that he borrowed from another gentleman named Peter Sims. But you're making little bets and just trying things that interest you, and you learn how to recognize complex forces that show that they're gaining momentum and double down. So everything from, you know, when we're running a campaign for one of our clients, we're doing that too. Even though we're using blueprints and templates, you don't really know until you roll it out what is going to catch fire. And when we find out what's catching fire, we double down on it very quickly. And it's the basis of the Creative Lab, another business book that I read early on in my business, you know, when I went to start my own business. It's called Rework. It's by the guys who started 37 Signals. And it totally flipped my idea of what business leadership looks like upside down in my head. I mean, I had always kind of come up under the command and control model and the very assertive, aggressive model and you know, put your butt in seat for 10 hours. It doesn't matter really what you're doing, but show up on the weekends. That shows that you're a fantastic employee. And this book says things like fire the workaholics and things like that. And just the idea that business could be run differently and even more effectively, judging from how well, you know, Basecamp and 37 Signals have done, that was pretty much of a revelation to me. The last influence, you know, there is I went a couple years ago to this play, if you could even call it that, called Sleep No More, and it's become a big hit. But basically, you go into this space that's all designed like an old hotel, and you essentially enter the story, and you enter the theatrical experience and walk through it on your own terms. It's completely immersive. And then people go online and they discuss, you know, the event, and new clues come up, and then they see it again. And the reason this was so influential to me, despite how cool it was on its own terms, is that it really opened my eyes to the fact that the way we communicate information is completely shifting. So, you know, the days where you would create a movie or a play and then advertise it and this sort of thing is sort of dissolving. I mean, today, entertainment is marketing. Marketing is entertainment. And I don't know that that's such a bad thing. It's that, you know, audiences are really used to and want to getting immersed. So that's influenced me in a lot of ways. One, I've brought that to our client work quite a bit, the idea of creating events in our marketing and immersive experiences. And, you know, again, for the Creative Lab project, I mean, if and when this theatrical event comes to life, it's not going to be your standard Broadway fair when you sit in the audience. It's going to happen online. It's going to happen in the real world. It's going to happen on the stage. But again, that's why I think I was born at the right time. I think this media world that we're living now, everything feeds on everything else, from marketing to business to entertainment. It's just a very cool time to be alive.
So on that note, what do we have to look forward to with Microframe Media? What's coming down the pike?
You know, we are having a lot of fun. We're growing. We're bringing on new clients. We're doing a lot of great work with our legacy clients. We have recently, you know, we've been into podcasts for a long time. And recently we've explored two new approaches to using podcasting as a great way of driving attention and driving new business. One is, you know, instead of having a completely just interview-based podcast, doing an interview-based podcast, but creating it more in the form of a story. And we're also working on something, or we've worked on this for a while, but we say doubling down on something that we call connective collaboration. You know, we've realized that for certain types of clients, it is not so much about, for certain types of clients, it's not so much about building a massive audience and converting that audience to new clients. It's about using the media and using the ability to offer your media as a way for other people to get exposure, as a doorway into meeting influential people who can ultimately help your business, because we are who we know. And actually, on that front, we are starting our own podcast. You know, I'm partnering with a gentleman named Michael Roderick, who is a very talented individual who I believe, you know, you may know, actually.
And I do.
Yes, and he and I are co-hosting a podcast called Access to Anyone, and I'm going to be more on the content side, and he's on the relationship building side, and we're going to talk about our tips for getting to know anyone you want to know. And you know, I had a blog that was really popular for a while. I write a column for Inc., but you know, podcasting is a fantastic medium, and it's what people want now. And we're going to try to do our best to create a really good one. So that's a lot of fun.
That's really exciting.
Yeah.
And Michael, who do you know personally who's currently doing remarkable work?
Wow, there are so many. I'll tell you, I'm going to talk about the guy who my wife says I have a man crush on. And his name is Blaine Graybosse. It's a funny story. I have a cousin who's about 5 years older than me. And, he's the one who got me into punk rock. And, you know, you always got to have one of those in your life. And he had a very good friend named Blaine. And, you know, I was kind of more of a goody two shoes, and they weren't. And I always thought they were real cool. And then I moved to Florida when I was about 9 years old. The punk rock thing came later. And I hadn't talked to this guy, Blaine, in 20 years. So on social media, I reconnected with him. And it turns out we had a whole lot in common. And we've become really fast friends. And we've done business together. We've collaborated on a whole lot of things. And this guy is just into the coolest stuff. I mean, he was at the forefront of the DVD revolution. He had one of the first DVD authoring companies. He's a video game designer. He's you know, very involved in the Producers Guild. He has this new company that's doing something really neat in the gaming space, the casino gaming space. So he just really innovative guy, really cool guy, really unique, and he's always doing great work. And I guess he'd be my choice.
Yeah, I'm very fond of Blaine. And truth be told, he was also a guest on Smashing the Plateau.
So yeah, funny you should mention him. Similar circles, yeah.
Michael, please tell listeners how they can learn more about you.
All right. Well, you can visit us at our website. It is www.microfamemedia.com. So that's microfamemedia.com. That is the best way to find me. I will drop me an email or give me a call. It's right there on the site, and I will get right back to you.
Great.
I love talking to new, interesting people.
We'll include that in the show notes. Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today as a guest on Smashing the Plateau. It's been such a great time talking to you about what you've done with your life, what you've done with your business, and the impact you're making on the world. It's great to have you. My guest today has been Michael Shine, CEO of Microfame Media. Thank you again, Michael, for joining us.
Thank you. I had a blast, David.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.